Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It's Friday, May 6, 2016. It's been a busy news week, and I've got some catching up to do with important stories that, well, I didn't get to earlier this week. Will you give me 20, maybe 30 minutes, and I'll bring you the world?
Give us 20 minutes and we'll give you the world. We bring good things to life.
Jackson Brown opens the podcast today. And it has been busy. We've been distracted by the presidential primary race and the Trump phenomenon. And we'll get to that at the very end of the podcast today, because some important things have been happening beyond our own nasal gazing. Beyond our own navel gazing. I knew I could say that. And I want to start with Turkey. This is a nation that is a nominal U.S. ally. And when I visited there a few years ago, I think it was 1999, I found a secular democracy built on the ruins of the Ottoman Empire. And the secular nature of the Turkish government was very clear. Muslim women were not permitted to wear headscarves, and there was a clear separation between church and state. And now that has shifted dramatically as Turkey becomes more autocratic and more Islamic. And the man to blame is Recep Tayyip Erdogan. And yesterday, he purged the guy who is nominally his superior. Currently, Erdogan is the president. He's the former prime minister. And he purged the prime minister who, as I say, in the flow chart, the power chart, is nominally above the president. And that guy's name is Ahmet Davutoğlu. And I have a little trouble with his name, but I think I said that right. Davutoğlu, something close to that. Anyway, his stepping down is because Erdogan wants to have all the power, all the attention, and all the glory. And in recent weeks, Davutoğlu has been negotiating with the Europeans, dealing with the refugee crisis, and in many ways, I guess, upstaging Erdogan, and he can't tolerate that. So he is sharpening his authoritarian style, similar to Vladimir Putin, and the U.S. so far has not really piped up about the changes in Turkey. And this comes at a time when the West, including the European Union, has been relying on Turkey to accept cash in exchange for stemming the flow of refugees from the Syrian war into Europe. It's a very ugly process, and the way it is being managed is offensive on many levels. But this is something that Europe is trying to do to protect itself, and Erdogan is a very unreliable ally on just about every front. Last year, Obama appeared to have persuaded him to get Turkey more involved in the war against the Islamic State, allowing U.S. to use bases at Incirlik, and a promise from Turkey to put troops on the ground. But none of that has happened. Instead, Erdogan used the moment to crack down on his own Kurdish population inside of Turkey. So it is expected that Davutoğlu will be the guy who takes the fall for various failures as Erdogan consolidates power, and his next moves are going to be hard to predict. And this comes against the backdrop of turmoil in the Turkish parliament, where the allies of Erdogan in the APK party have been trying to maneuver to withdraw immunity that all members of parliament enjoy. Immunity from prosecution, but only for the members of the Kurdish People's Party. That is it's called the HDP in their letter system. And the HDP is resisting. But this has led to a series of brawls on the floor of the parliament, with members punching, kicking, hurling glasses at each other. Threats of "I will shoot you" have been exchanged. And ultimately, the HDP, the Kurds, walked out of the debate last night, And then the remaining members of the parliament unanimously approved this new, very punitive and selective policy. So this is going to be an ongoing problem. And as Turkey descends into an Islamic dictatorship, no better than many of its neighbors, will the U.S. impose sanctions? Well, we've gotten along with the new dictator in Egypt and can't even call his power grab a coup. So the U.S. is neutralized and boxed in by many issues that it created itself. Meanwhile, the other country that is roiled by unrest and political confusion is Brazil. And as you know, the president there, Dilma Rousseff, is about to be suspended from presidency if impeachment proceedings go forward. The Senate in Brazil is going to vote on that next week. But yesterday, a Supreme Court justice issued a ruling that the guy who carried the charges, the impeachment charges against Dilma Rousseff, who is the Speaker of the House named Eduardo Cunha, he must step down because he's facing a corruption trial. And they also fined the vice president who will become acting president if the Senate acts as expected next week, Michael Temer, or Michelle Temer. He agreed to pay fines for his own campaign finance violations in the last election. But Temer, who is the austerity candidate, he is expected to immediately cut spending and impose other austerity moves on the economy of Brazil. And I think it will throw the country into a recession, if not a deep depression. But he, of course, is honoring the wishes of Goldman Sachs and other money people, mostly from outside of Brazil. So it is a huge mess, as you may know. Virtually everyone in the leadership posts in Brazil has been implicated in this wide-ranging scandal, what Pepe Escobar calls the car wash scandal. And it relates to the way contractors to the state oil company were shaken down for bribes and political contributions. But when they bounce the Speaker of the House, the guy right behind him is in line for a trial related to corruption. So it is a real mess there, and nobody is going to win. I just hope that stability will return to Brazil and that it doesn't involve a return of the military to power. There was a brutal military dictatorship in Brazil for decades, and I hope that that does not resurface. This is the first time I've had a moment to comment on this amazing and dangerous wildfire that is raging out of control in the tar sands country of Canada's Alberta province. And the town of Fort McMurray, a boom town that expanded exponentially in recent years because of the shale boom in the region, has been devastated, if not decimated. They have displaced, the fire has displaced 88,000 of the city's 90,000 residents. Only 2,000 remain, and I imagine that those are police and firefighters and those who are going to try to hold down the fort at Fort McMurray. But it's a major problem with this instant migration of 90,000 people, and some have been absorbed in Calgary and in Edmonton. But there are some people who are stuck trying to flee. The gas stations have closed. They don't have any fuel to sell. And people, as they run out of gas, are just kind of trapped in place. Speculation is that human behavior caused the fire and that it's been fueled by a prolonged drought and unseasonably warm weather. It hit 88 degrees in Fort McMurray this week. And, of course, it's only May. The other day, the NSA and the CIA released information on the number of searches of U.S. persons. And in the last 2 years, the numbers have doubled. And these are searches conducted without a warrant. Now, they're using an end run in many cases where they're searching for someone else and then they come upon information about you or me. And, of course, this is a mission creep. The number of searches doubled to about 4,672, all this without a warrant. And this doesn't include the number of times that the FBI has examined information collected by the NSA and by the CIA. And they're saying that these are incidental searches. You know, they were looking for somebody else and this just popped up. But in my view, these are clear violations, admitted violations of the Fourth Amendment. And they also reported that, you know, the metadata, the telephone records where they claim they just look at who called who, what time and when. Well, there were almost 24,000 searches on metadata in the year of 2015. Also, the missing data from the FBI is of great concern to privacy advocates. Last year, the alleged fix, the USA Freedom Act, it conspicuously exempts the FBI from disclosing how often it searches the so-called 702 database. And this was part of the effort when the bill secretly disappeared for a few days and came back seriously modified, and we believe that the FBI, aided by allies in the Congress, made arbitrary amendments to it that were never considered in committee. They were simply added to the bill as it was sent to the floor for a vote. You know those Panama Papers that show the offshore activity, some of it illegal? Well, the individual who is the source of this huge leak of documents from the law firm has surfaced, and she or he is negotiating for immunity and promising to cough up more information if she or he is granted that immunity. And in a statement coming from John Doe, legitimate whistleblowers who expose unquestionable wrongdoing, whether insiders or outsiders, deserve immunity from government retribution. The source said that the papers could spur thousands of prosecutions if only law enforcement could access and evaluate the actual documents. The individual seems a little pissed with the consortium of journalists who he or she gave the information to in kind of an Ed Snowden-type move. So there are some hints about this individual's political views, including income inequality, the American campaign finance system, the revolving door of U.S. officials who take jobs at banks or other companies that they once regulated. So it sounds like somebody who's a Bernie Sanders supporter. But we really are just speculating here. Now, this statement was released through a German newspaper which originally received the once confidential archive of documents taken from the law firm Mossack Fonseca. And this is going to be interesting to see. The statement from this source said that he or she was not and had never been a government official or contractor, and he was extremely critical of the news media, suggesting that certain unnamed organizations had declined initial offers from him to take and report on the documents. That's like the former Bradley Manning, now Chelsea, who tried to get a reporter at the Washington Post to return calls, but got nowhere and went to WikiLeaks instead. Now, speaking of leakers, the war on whistleblowers by the Obama administration is the subject of a dispute over who's actually triggering it and who's driving it. And new information from the former general counsel of the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, this guy's name is Robert Litt, indicates that the Obama administration was very active in pursuing prosecution of leakers. And while the Obama administration has told reporters at the New York Times that Obama never ordered investigations, many others say that, the push by the intelligence community received strong support from the White House. So I want to credit Kevin Gostola over at Shadowproof, who is covering this in some detail, and I'll link to his story in the show file for this podcast at peterbcollins.com. And according to Litt, the push by the intelligence community, was in support of the administration's active pursuit of individuals responsible for unauthorized disclosures. But we know that many of these whistleblowers, like John Kiriakou, Thomas Drake, these were honorable people who didn't break the law. But they were hounded. They received retribution in the form of legal proceedings for being whistleblowers. And so I think that the paternity of the crackdown, the war on whistleblowers, is an important issue. And Gostola quotes Jesslyn Radack, who is now the director of Exposed Facts Whistleblower Program. And the concern is about the Insider Threat Detection Program, because they've now automated it, and they monitor the internet searches and other activity of people who work in the intelligence services. And she's concerned that this removes the ability for a human being to evaluate whether, you know, somebody who visited WikiLeaks had, you know, bad intentions. But the mere fact that a robot finds and tracks that and reports it could lead to a suspension without much human intervention. And Jim Bamford, the NSA expert and author who's on our program about a month ago, is quoted here talking about the case that I discussed with him, where the NSA had withdrawn its security clearances from a woman who simply had an internal human resources beef. And so the overreaction by these powerful administrators often sends a chilling message to others not to take any chances, and certainly don't pick up a whistle, much less blow it. One other front in the war on transparency. You know, the Obama administration came to power saying it was going to be so transparent, the most transparent. Well, the Justice Department has had to take steps, prodded by Congress, to restore access to inspectors general for 72 agencies across the federal government. They are restoring access to internal records of the government where, because of the operation of the Obama administration and policy changes that were made, made it impossible for them to access these documents. And the IGs say that they had to drop investigations into sex abuse of the Peace Corps, fatal shootings by DEA officers were slowed, hindered, or closed as a result of the change in the rules for access. So in December, a congressional spending bill signed by Obama threatened to cut off funding if records were improperly withheld, and so the Justice Department has relented. But note that it didn't occur voluntarily. Every day I like to pause for a second and thank the people who support my work here at the Peter B. Collins Podcast with your subscriptions. People like Jason Ferguson, Andy Krieger, DGL, you know who you are, and Kathleen Lowy. Thank you one and all. And I invite others to join in and support my work. I'm not making a living here doing this. I do it because I love it and because I believe in podcasting. And I think that ultimately we will make enough money here that I could do this full time. But if you'd like to support and encourage what I'm doing, come on over to peterbcollins.com. You click menu, then become a subscriber. Choose a level of support. With a $50 annual subscription and a mailing address in the continental U.S., you get a bonus book of your choice, and the options are there on the subscription page at peterbcollins.com. This Sunday is May 8th, and it's also Mother's Day. And it is also the day that we're going to launch our new Kickstarter campaign for NewsBud. You've heard me talk about this over the months, and we tried it with a very ambitious goal starting in February. We didn't make that goal, but we got almost $200,000 in pledges. So we rewrote the business plan because we're determined to make this work. And Sibel Edmonds is going to kick this off. I'll be sending out emails. I'll be making Facebook posts starting on Sunday, so look for that. And I hope you will support our NewsBud campaign. We're hoping to raise $150,000, far less than we did before. And with your support, I know we can do it. It's been a tough week in the Gaza Strip. On Wednesday, Israeli soldiers crossed over, claiming that they were going to root out and destroy underground tunnels. And the hint is that they extracted information from a recently arrested Hamas member, and that this may have triggered the Israeli raid there. Well, this produced some mortar attacks by Hamas into Israel. Nobody got hurt by that. But, of course, the disproportionate Israeli response is triggered with Israeli warplanes and tanks firing into the densely populated Gaza Strip. One 54-year-old Palestinian woman was killed by fragments from an Israeli tank shell. And there are a few others who have been injured, but no Israeli troops or soldiers. And on Friday, the deputy head of Hamas, Ismail Haniyeh, told worshippers that the Hamas group is not calling for a war with Israel, but we will not allow incursions at all. The resistance will not allow the establishment of so-called buffer zones inside the borders of the Gaza Strip. He said that Israeli forces had intruded up to 200 meters on the pretext of searching for tunnels. And they claim that the tunnels are inactive and were built for the war in 2014. The sex harassment, the rape crisis in the U.S. military continues, and the military is doing a lousy job responding despite the heightened attention, the increased reporting of inappropriate sexual contact. And one of the biggest problems remains that Congress did not change the fatal flaw in the investigation and prosecution of these crimes. And that is that military commanders still have the final word on whether a prosecution will take place. And this allows all kinds of favoritism and real serious problems to occur. It's simple. Appointing an outside prosecutor, taking these cases outside of the military justice system, would result in a much fairer process. And despite a 37% increase in reports of unwanted sexual contact, we still see a very low conviction rate. Of the total of 2,500 sexual assaults that were reported for prosecution, they got a conviction in only 238 cases. That's less than 10%. And where they did win a conviction? Nearly 25% of those convicted received less than a year of jail time. So it's a free-for-all in the U.S. military today. And the sexual abuse is not all heterosexual. Some of it is a kind of command rape of male-on-male violence that where the perpetrator still believes that he's not gay. And there are serious issues that need to be exposed and rooted out in the American military. Well, the opium harvest in Afghanistan is bountiful once again. This, of course, raises so many issues. The Taliban extracts profits from the opium trade. And this, of course, is the underlying issue that supports the warlords and other various armed groups in Afghanistan. And it points out that no matter what the U.S. has done, paying off farmers, going in with soldiers and uprooting poppies, doesn't make a damn bit of difference. The demand is there and it will be filled. President Obama announced another 58 commutations for federal prisoners sentenced to under nonviolent drug offenses. Brings the count to a total of 306 who've received his commutation. And by my count, that leaves only 9,700 additional cases that we know have been applied for in that backlog at the White House Pardon Office. I hope he gets on the stick and really follows through as he's promised to address the serious problem of over-incarceration in this country. North Carolina remains defiant in its really creepy bathroom regulations. And this is such an obvious ploy. As embattled Governor Pat McCrory is up for re-election this year, he is pandering to the hard-right Bible thumpers in the Republican Party. And as you know, this is so incoherent. We have no issues with bathroom usage in this country. And to suggest that a transgender person would be more comfortable and the other bathroom users would be more comfortable if she or he only uses a bathroom consistent with the gender, the sex on their birth certificate. I mean, it's just such incredible bullshit. And the fact that these people want to work themselves up and imagine that something evil can happen because the person in the next stall who is defecating has a different sexual orientation. And of course, this has been going on for years without any problem. But because North Carolina passed a law to permit discrimination against protected minorities, including around sexual orientation, they are sticking to it, and it's racist in its, you know, its orientation. But it's also, you know, incredibly short-sighted. So the federal government is threatening to cut as much as $5 billion in federal dollars that flow to North Carolina right now, citing that the law violates the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And the North Carolinians think they've got a winning issue there. Really. We're learning that Berta Caceres, the Honduran environmental activist who was murdered in March, was harassed and the target of a smear campaign for months before she was murdered. They tried to tar her and her colleagues, as violent anarchists bent on terrorizing the population through their protests at the site of a big dam, a hydroelectric project that's being built there in Honduras. And now there are some suspects who've been taken into custody who have ties to the military, the security agency, and we'll continue to see how that case is investigated. It's hard to believe that the people responsible will actually be held accountable. Now, I'm a little shocked here because I never thought that Johnson & Johnson's baby powder, talcum powder, could cause any kind of risks to humans. But a second major court judgment has been levied against Johnson & Johnson for the side effects of the use of talcum powder. The woman in the current case, $55 million award for her ovarian cancer. And just a couple of months ago, February, Johnson & Johnson was dinged with a $72 million judgment from the family of an Alabama woman who died from ovarian cancer. There are at least 1,200 other talcum powder-related lawsuits pending. Johnson & Johnson says it's safe, this is all crazy. But I guess we got to be careful with the baby powder. I didn't know about that. We're learning that the Transportation Security Administration, the people who are responsible for airport security theater, are warning travelers because of low staffing and high volumes of travelers this summer and some heightened security processes that lines will be longer than ever. And the New York Times says we ought to hire more screeners. I think we ought to dismantle the whole goddamn thing. It's just preposterous. I mean, when these security checkpoints are tested, they fail on weapons and other contraband at the rate of 70 to 90%. Who are we kidding? But of course, we can never step back and admit that this is bullshit, this is a failure. We've got to spend more money on a useless process. And finally today, as Paul Ryan signals that he's not ready to unify around the Donald, the Republican Party is in real turmoil. And it's fascinating to see these rear guard establishment people say, well, we've got to find a way to stop the Donald. I think you missed your opportunity there. New polling shows that Hillary Clinton, in one case, would tie Donald Trump, but her average is a spread of about 7 points over Trump. Now, the people who want to claim that Hillary is inevitable and that the Sanders campaign is over are still in denial because Bernie Sanders has doubled the spread. On average, the polls show that he would beat Sanders by 14.7 points. I'm sorry, he would beat Trump by 14.7 points. And this, of course, is something we've got to be thinking rationally about. And I find that too many Clinton supporters are thinking very emotionally about their candidate. And while a 7-point average margin is encouraging between Clinton and Trump, we know that he can make a lot of noise about a lot of the baggage that Hillary Clinton drags along with her. And that 50% difference between the level that Clinton beats Trump and Sanders beats Trump could evaporate, as Republicans do find a way to swallow hard and accept Trump as their standard bearer. Thanks for joining me today for News and Comment. You're free to share this podcast as far and wide as you can. And I'm grateful that you're listening. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails.